This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 4, The New Batting Manual. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we define the new batting manual. Now there is no manual, and we help a couple of players who have batting problems. One chap wants to turn a strength of aggressive batting into a super strength, and another player wants to eliminate the flick shot because it keeps getting him out. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This, of course, is your guide to better cricket. So we're going to be with you for about half an hour or so, and we're going to help you out with a few cricketing things. My name's David Hinchcliffe, I look after things here, and helping me to help you are two cricket coaches with very fine pedigrees, the first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
How are you? Okay?
Yes, very good, thanks. Had our first pre-season net session last night, and two new players turned up, and news from the management team that we've got a couple of other players lined up as well, so as always at this time of year in Britain, there's lots of hope around for a successful season in a couple of months' time.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear that.
And second of all, it is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavis.
Hello, David. How are you? Sounds like things are going well up there with a few new recruits.
Yeah, a few new recruits. Some definites. I saw them with my own eyes. And some rumoured, and you know what rumours are like, you know, probably about 1 in 10 come true. So we'll see what happens, but it's good to be in the nets and working hard with some guys who have been around all winter. So very exciting. A couple of little things from the Under-19 World Cup that's going on before we venture into our topic this week. I just wanted maybe a 30-second thought from both of you on it, which is... Well, first of all, have you seen the chap who can bat? Who can bowl left and right handed spin?
Yeah, and also bats in the top order. I had a discussion with David Graveney today about that. Actually, fantastic, eh? No surprises from which part of the cricketing world he comes from, but fantastic to see somebody doing that and to do it with such confidence and competence as well. It's magnificent.
I know, exactly. You know, it gives you so many tactical options, doesn't it? You know, you can bowl left to a right hander and right to a left hander and keep the ball turning away from them, or if you want to spin it in, it's very exciting.
Yeah, magnificent, really. And I love these tournaments because whilst we always look to the BBL, IPL, World Cups, all of that for the next things going forward, it's often the younger minds that work most creatively, isn't it, rather than the established pros. And to see things like this happening, to see some of the high quality of cricket that's going on around the world in those younger age groups has been magnificent over the last 10 days or so.
And the other thing, of course, that's caused controversy, as it always does every time it happens, Lavers, is we've had a man-canning as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like breaks the internet these days, isn't it?
Yeah, well, people love to be outraged, don't they?
Everything stops. So. People stop like doing their normal routine of life, and everyone takes to Twitter or to whatever their social media kind of medium is, and they start voicing their opinions. And I must have seen I don't know, hundreds of different people giving their opinion, and some of them blaming the bowler, some of them blaming the batter for leaving his ground, some of them blaming the coach, some of them blaming the umpires. It's all going on, but it's all good. Interesting conversation. I don't know what your opinion is on it. I'm sure you've got one. I'm sure everyone has.
Well, do you know what? I read it somewhere the other day, and it sort of summarised my thoughts on the whole thing, which is just don't be out of your crease. It's not a problem.
He was hardly out of his crease, though, was he? Let's be honest. I mean, I know technically he was, but jeepers creepers. To me, I'd be honest with him. We had a discussion at breakfast around the subject as well, is that whilst I understand that 17, 18, 19 year olds in the heat of a battle where it's whether we stay in a competition or not will may do that and may put the appeal forward. My question is, what would I have done in that circumstance as West Indies?
That's interesting.
West Indies coach, and the first thing I would have done would have been to indicate to the captain that he needed to withdraw the appeal. And who gives a monkey's? I mean, I'll be brutally honest with you, and I'll get shot down by some West Indian supporters here. But you're not going to win the World Cup. I know it's going to be a shock to you, but you're not going to win the World Cup. And actually, who gives a monkey's who wins the Under-19 World Cup? It's more about talent development, player identification, than it is about, you know, who wins it, because you're not going to go to town on that. I can't see Bridgetown, Barbados and St John's Antigua going mad over a positive result and getting into a quarter final. To me, the coach there has got to say, right, what am I here for? And if he's there just to try and win the World Cup with a team that isn't good enough, then fair dues, you did the right thing. But to me, I'd have been out on that pitch and just gone, captain, I think you need to have a different angle on that and be the adult in the room.
Is there an angle for the administrators to kind of review their involvement? Because obviously this is the sort of thing that's happened at international cricket. It's now come down to under-19 cricket. It'll be happening under-17, under-15 club cricket. Doesn't the choice need to be taken away, or doesn't it need to be worded slightly better, or is there a better angle that we can come at it from an administration point of view to try and give a bit more clarity to people rather than complaining at everyone? Because effectively every person involved has come out looking bad when they can't have all done something wrong, and they probably, and almost certainly all of them haven't done something wrong. So is there an administration angle that could be improved for this kind of thing?
Possibly would be my response to that. But I think whatever regulation and stipulation and rule change or whatever the case you may put in, there's always going to be a grey area around it in terms of will somebody take that opportunity or not take that opportunity, Sam, particularly when it comes down to pressure. And those kids, for their moment, that is their big game, isn't it? You know, they're out of the World Cup or they're in it. And I think the biggest thing for me is, can you create an example? So I'll give you an example from the Australian Open tennis the other day. Was when Hewitt served the ball and it went in, and it went into the right area, and it was called a fault. And the actual guy that received the serve questioned it, and he said that was in. Review it. And I think that's a classic thing, because they showed it on the big telly, everybody saw it, and now you'll get people around the world being a little bit fairer as a result of somebody at the top end of a game doing it the right way as opposed to doing it the ruthless way. And I think it was an opportunity missed. Whatever regulation you put in, there's always going to be a decision about right or wrong. But if you show an example of somebody doing it and choosing not to do it, a coach coming on the field and saying, actually, we're not going to take advantage of that, I think it would have actually cleaned the whole thing up.
Okay, well, we can talk about that for forevermore. But let's move on to the topic that I wanted to talk about this week, so we can see if we can squeeze it into 5 minutes or so. Impossible task, but maybe we can get an overview, a thought of it. And which I was thinking about technique, because a lot of players come to me, had some new players come to me this year, and they're always talking about, when they're talking about batting, they're always talking about, I want to improve my technique, I want to make my technique better. It's all about my technique. So if you were writing the batting manual today, how would you write it for someone who is thinking about technique, but where there's a world where technique has become so much more of an individual thing?
Well, it's a great question. It's one that I often pose myself, to be brutally honest with you. The game was much more, I suppose the coaching game was, I wouldn't say simpler, I would say it was more convenient 10, 15 years ago. And now we do see that there is individual difference. We talk about it on this show all the time. But to me, the intentions of a game are no different to they were 10, 15 years ago. You know, you still want to be able to hit the ball. You still want to be able to bowl the ball. You still want to be able to throw it hard and accurately. You want to be able to hit the spinner over the top. You want to be able to sweep the spinner. You want to be able to play off the back foot as a batter. Against pacier bowlers. So the intentions are exactly the same, and that would be my starting point for coaching, would be, what are the intentions that we are looking to be able to meet? What are the challenges that the bowler faces, the batter faces, a fielder faces in order to be successful, and they have to overcome? And that would be my starting point. My second thing would be then to give people choice. And one of the things that coaching manuals over the years haven't given people is choice. So an example would be around stance. So have a go at standing with your feet inside the width of your shoulders and see what you feel like in terms of balance, stability, and the ability to move. Then try batting with your feet wider than your shoulders and having a bit more flexion in your legs, like a Peterson or a McCullum or somebody like that that we see around the world. Give both a go, and then you report back to me as a coach which one feels better, which one you feel that you can move from, and which one you feel you can be most effective. We can do the same with contact points as a batter. We can say, right, now I want you to make contact with the ball as late as you possibly can in line with your tummy. How does that feel? Underneath your eyes, which has been the conventional way that people are being coached. See it, tell me how that feels. What's your control? What's your outcome? And then slightly in front of your eyes and see what the outcomes are and the feelings are that are associated with that. So to me, coach the intention first, then give the options that people have available to them, and then they can stick upon the ones that work best for them. And that would be my kind of coaching manual.
All right, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more you want to say. I've got the question, so let's fire away. First question, good analysis is a subset of good coaching.
Yes.
Second question, sidearm beats bowling machine.
Yes.
Rock, paper, scissors there. Third question, batting partnerships work better when batters have different styles.
Yes.
And now we are going to answer a couple of questions that have been sent in various ways, as email and Facebook messaging, and you can phone in. There's lots of ways you can get in touch with us for us to answer your questions. And then we answer those questions, and then we decide on the best question of the week, which wins a prize of an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So you can email those questions into us via coach@pitchvision.com. or go to our Facebook page and send us a message there. Cameron is the first person who's emailed a question into us this week, and he says, are there any drills that I could use to eliminate the flick shot and play straight early in my innings instead? I'm good with the flick shot, but I lose my wicket to that shot early in the innings way too many times. So as is often the case, something which is a strength can also be a weakness. How do we deal with that?
I think there are two ways, and a drill response is one way. So you're building up repetition. But of course, by building up that repetition, you're not actually telling your body when you can play that shot and when you can't play that shot, or when you have to go to this one and when you don't have to go to this one. It all comes down to decision making to me, and a mindset. And that would be my starting point before you hit balls, is mindset. One of the strongest ever examples of mindset to me was somebody who's notable for having a strong mindset in Alistair Cook. And I sat in a team meeting after England had been bowled out for 52 against the West Indies in 2009. Cookie was in a pretty poor run of form, kept nicking off outside off stump. And he stood up in front of his whole team and said, I am not going to play a drive outside off stump until I've got 150 in this next game. And in the next game, he batted. He got the 75. He had a little flirt at one, had to be said, and he put it away again. And that wasn't down to any drill or practice or anything. That was purely down to him setting an intention in his head about what he was going to do. He came off that intention once. He then reset his intention and churned out another one of his magnificent hundreds for England. And that was purely down to him committing to a mindset. And it was incredibly impressive. So the first thing I would say is get that bit right. So yes, you have got it in your locker. Yes, it is an asset. No, you don't have to put that particular shot away until you're on 145 or 150 like Alistair Cook committed to. But have a real good understanding of when that shot is going to become more useful against the bowling attack you're going to face and the conditions that you're going to bat in. Because we have to be respectful for those two things. If it is a strength, just know how to apply it. If it is going to be a potential weakness at the start of an innings on particular decks, you know, then put it away. but set your mind, because it's the strongest thing that we have within our batting armoury, and often we look for drills to try and sort ourselves out, when actually just some simple thought process, some simple commitment to ourselves in what we're going to do. And the Alistair Cook example is one of many, but the best example that I've got that I can give you. So yes, there are drills, and Sam might talk about those, but to me, set your mindset first.
And it's pretty easy to practice that as well. You can say to yourself, okay, I'm going to go into this net and I am not going to play the flick shot at all during this net. You might, but the next question is, how do you decide what you're going to do instead? Because you've got to do something.
I think constraints nets, base nets are really useful for that, both against seamers and against pace. So going in and saying, okay, today, instead of not what I'm not going to do, this is what I'm going to do. And we had one this morning, actually, in a spin session at 7 o'clock in the morning. We had a leg spin bowler on Merlin set up, bowling it back of a length. And they had to throw a dice before they went in and faced their six balls. And if it came out as an odd number, they would have to hit with the spin. And if it came out as an even number, they'd have to hit into the spin. And for those six balls, and then randomise it the next time. Chuck the dice up in the air, see how it lands. And really what you're looking to do there is not to say that one way is better than the other, but the fact is that in the context of a game, one might be more appropriate than the other in a particular surface or against a particular field set, or to give you a bit of an option. So you tell yourself that you can only do one thing. So it might be that you go into a net, as Sam says, and you're going to say, right, today I am going to work on hitting as many balls as I can straight back down the ground. So whenever I get an opportunity to hit this ball straight back down the ground, I can do that. And then by the time you work at that more and more, then you have more control over when you can access that and when you can't. And then you might say, right, for the last 5 minutes of my net, I'm actually just going to bat, and I'm going to link it all together and see whether on this surface I can actually get some flicks away now I'm in. And again, you practice that. But constraints-based nets are really interesting for building up different options that then you can pull out of your toolkit when you see the right circumstance or the right bowler to play that to.
Next question's from Liam. And Liam says, I am 21 years old and playing second 11 for a Division 1 club in Australia. I'm a lower order bowling all-rounder, and we have an extremely strong and deep batting lineup for our competition. Previously to playing at this club, I was opening the batting for a first 11 Division 2 club, and I've always thought of myself as a steady placement and not boundary hitting style batsman. Then in the last couple of seasons, I've batted down the order and I've come in and I have to score quickly. Now, when I search for quick runs, I can be generally aggressive and have been successful at doing that. Should I embrace this new style? And what are some training tips I can use for when I'm at nets? So it's sort of a follow-up question from last week. We had a guy who couldn't do it, who wanted to do it, but couldn't really do it. Now we had a guy who didn't do it, and now he's managed to successfully do it. And I guess he wants to keep on that role. So should he keep on that role? And if he should, what kind of practices can he do at nets to help him along?
Well, the first thing I'd say is, yes, you need to stay on that role, because what that's going to give you as you go up the levels or you're playing different formats of cricket is versatility. And I think one of the big things about the development of somebody like Joe Root, who is what we're probably, in all intents and purposes, deem to be a classic batter, really, is that the only thing that changes from format to format is the tempo that he does it at. So how quickly does he look to score is the only thing that changes. And you've obviously been a batter who could bat at the top of the order and you felt that you could bat for long periods of time. And then you've had exposure, which we talk about a lot on this show. You've had exposure in the batting lower down, and that intention of batting lower down has opened up aspects of your game. And effectively, you can apply that as and when you see fit within different formats, within different contexts, and within different situations. And as I say to a number of the guys at school when they're practicing power hitting, you know, this isn't just reserved for the last three or four overs of a game. This can be applied. If you fancy a bowler and you think you've got the measure of him and you want to put him down, which means that the opening bowler is going to have to come back on and bowl his overs when he doesn't want to, when he might be knackered or the ball's in poor shape, then absolutely use it as a tactical tool and away you go. So all of this, all of these skills that you're developing now and you're embracing, and I encourage you to embrace it, gives you more versatility in any way, shape and form, any circumstance, any bowler, any format. Whereas before, you felt that you had a limited game that would only be best applied in certain circumstances. So God, go ahead, embrace it. Fill your boots on that one for me. How do you go about it? Well, you've obviously done a pretty good job through the exposure that you've had so far. In match play, it sounds like a little bit, rather than practice play. So I would just continue on with that. And then look at some of the best players in the world who are adaptable. So look at your Roots, look at your AB de Villiers, you look at your Kohlis. You can play all three formats of a game. See what they do. What is it that they do in each of those formats that allows them to be successful? Have a look, pick out a couple of things that you like, and then attack those in your next sessions and in your skill development sessions. That will then support this new mindset that you've got, which has given you the opportunity to attack, and then you can build it up from there. But always look at the guys at the top that can do it across those three formats. Those three, to me, are the best examples of it. I would say Warner, you know, is another example of it as well.
Williamson would be number one for me, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. There's loads of guys out there, aren't there, Sam, that you could have a look at. Pick out one or two things that go across them and then put into your game. But well done. Stick with it.
They're all really similar, those four or five. Probably not Warner, but your Root, Kohli, de Villiers and Williamson are all really similar in the way that they take their game, and they just maybe adapt very, very slightly in terms of their level of intent. But the game they take to any innings is almost identical, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, yeah. And I think, you know, they'd have been in a similar place to you a few years ago where they'd have had one mode where they were really good at. And then over the course of time, they've just increased the tempo in certain circumstances, situations and formats.
So let's talk about some practical things that you can do at Nets. Assuming, a player comes to you like at school or something and says, you know, I'm going well with this new aggressive approach, but I really want to step up the training to make sure that I can really nail it. What kind of things would you be doing with them in practice?
If you can start to map out what your different options are, which are obviously more than you had previously, and get an understanding of what they are. So when you need to make a decision in a game, you know what tools you've got in your bag effectively, and you know what you've got up your sleeve, then that would be a really useful starting point. And then if we can have a look at how those shots or different methods of attacking are going to be more relevant or less relevant on a different surface or against a different type of bowler, or in any different condition, then that would be really good from an understanding point of view of what you're gonna have a go at. Obviously, from a technical point of view, you can also look at how you're playing these shots. But it sounds like the execution has probably been quite good because you've had a bit of success already, and it may be that the conditions have suited that. But technically, you've probably done quite well. But from a mental process, I'll be trying to learn a little bit and think about how I can make sure that not only I've got this attacking game that has worked a little bit, but I've got this attacking game which I can now apply to situations and circumstances, and I can be a successful in more than one environment rather than just in the conditions I've had so far.
I think another good one as well, David, is when you say you're in a net session, yes, you've got this intention to hit the ball hard, but what we tend to see in those net sessions is people either hit the ball hard or they miss it or don't score. So their ball striking improves, but actually their ability to play attacking doesn't improve because their strike rate stays the same because they have more dot balls. So what we used to work on with England a lot was, yes, let's have these options where we can hit, but also understand that if a ball doesn't land in the right place, then we have to be able to turn it into square leg, or we have to, because square leg's generally out quite a lot, or we have to block it into just in front of square on the offside to pick up one. So Duncan Fletcher used to call them release shots. Okay, so there's no point in just having the big bunts, and it's great to practice that in range hitting and all of that. But actually, when you go into a net session, it's your opportunity to see how that mixes up as a bit of a package against a bowler. So, you know, if it's up there and it's in my area, I go for it and I ping it over the top. If it's not, then I just turn it and I get off strike and I give myself a one or a two option. And that's where nets, to me, are brilliant for practicing that, because it's the only chance that we have to actually face bowlers, human beings, before we go and take it out onto the dance floor.
Now we're going to hand the show over completely to one member of the team for 1 minute. Mark Garraway. He's on his soapbox. He's got something to say. Let's find out what it is. Over to you, Garris.
I'm going to take you to high catching because in the Northern Hemisphere, we're getting towards that point in time where we go from doing no high catching whatsoever to all of a sudden, first couple of weeks of the season, the ball goes up in the air. We've got those fairy liquid hands because they've been doing the washing up all the winter. And people get bumps and bruises. So what can we do to toughen up these hands? Because those high catches are going to go up and we need to be confident underneath them. We need to make sure that we can sustain our hands over the course of a six-month season. And the last thing we want to do is get a bruise that sticks with us for the whole of the year. So, you know, we've got some winds around the Northern Hemisphere at the moment, and that's a fantastic opportunity to pump up some incredibles, even hard tennis balls up into the air for people to catch, even off a racket. You don't have to have that much skill to be able to hit balls up in the air. And just get used to tracking distance, getting your body position right, making the ground to get to the ball and getting some balls in the hands. Even a soft tennis ball going into the hands will help you from a technical perspective. Then we can go to incredis, which gets that bit of impact going in. And then eventually, last couple of weeks before the cricket season starts, find any bit of land that you can, get a few cricket balls pumped up in the air, go to the softer ones first, maybe the ones that have been mashed up, and build that up. But just because we're indoors doesn't mean to say that I'm looking out at the sky now, it's windy as anything, it's sunny as anything. What fantastic opportunity to get on a tennis court, to get on a netball court, to get on a spare bit of land, even in a car park, and pongo some balls up in the air and start getting used to those high balls.
And that is the end of the show for another week. We have had a lot of fun, as always. But before we head off, we are going to decide on the winner of this week's competition, which is the online coaching course from Pitch Vision at pitchvision.com. And the two contenders are Cameron, who had a problem with his flick shot, and Liam, who's having some good times and wanted to turn those good times into great times. So which one did we prefer this week, Garris?
I'm going to go for Cameron this week because I'm actually going to give you the course that you need to go after, buddy, as well. I mean, that doesn't happen very often, but I'm going to. So, Cameron, I reckon you need to tap into Kevin Peterson's course because he talks exactly about having the ability to turn the bat face on a ball, but it's the timing of that. I'll tell you no more about that because Kevin Peterson can teach you it himself.
Yeah, he can show you a few videos and stuff as well, so that's fantastic. If someone wanted to get in touch and have their chance of winning the Kevin Peterson course or any of the others, how could they get in touch with us, guys?
Yeah, or the Mark Garraway course, which is really good value.
Oh, yeah, superb.
Which is 0203 239 7543 on the phone or coach@pitchvision.com on the email.
That is correct. One way that a lot of people have started getting in touch with us now is through Facebook. Our Facebook page, we're always posting stuff there, but you can contact us through that page by going to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and you can tweet us as well @pitchvisionacad. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can do that by going to your favourite podcast app, typing in Pitch Vision Academy into the search box, and you'll get us there. It's the first result. Click on the or tap on the subscribe button to get that for free every week. And if you want to get the show notes or you want to stream it online or do one of the myriad other things you can do on our webpage, which is suitable for all devices, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the fun in there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Garris. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.